Live.
Hey everyone, I would like to call the study session of the University City Council to order on October the 26th at 5:30. Do we know at this time, granted, I think we've got some fluidity in our agenda. Do we have any changes to the agenda that we know of at this time, Mr. Rose?
Not that I'm aware of, Mayor.
Thank you.
We didn't hear you, Mayor.
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. Tell me if I do have a sound problem. Can we now move forward with the youth employment program?
Yes. We've got three items proposed for discussion. These items were placed on your agenda as a result of when you considered the annual operating budget. You had asked for basically an overview of the past programs as well as the current senior program, how we operate up under normal circumstances. So I will turn the first discussion over to our finance director, Keith Cole, to present the youth employment program. Mr. Cole.
Yes, good evening. Honorable Mayor and members of council. So I'll be talking about the youth employment program and this program started around 2011 and it was piloted by University City Chamber of Commerce, the school district, and the University City itself. The program was to provide University City residents ages 16 to 19 with meaningful work experience and relevant job skills, in addition to providing an educational component. The part of the program, the youth would learn how to obtain and retain employment while managing their income properly. And they would also conduct themselves in a professional manner. They'd learn how to dress for an interview and how to market themselves in a job market. To manage the program was University City Chamber of Commerce, which was led by Ellen Byrne, and the University City School District was led by Christine Woodward. I think she was a social worker. The role that the city and the school district played was that both the city and the school district would split the cost 50% for reimbursing the businesses who participated in the program. And then the finance department would then do a miscellaneous bill to the school district. And then they in turn just would reimburse the city. And the program costs, so between 2014 and 2017, the program cost approximately $38,000. So, and they shared that cost between the city and the school district. So each paid roughly $19,000. And then in addition, between 2011 and 2017, the city paid approximately $143,000 in part-time wages. And that's where the city took on the youth and through the summer program and paid their wages. So roughly the city's portion that it costed was roughly $162,000. And that was between 2011 and 2017. The objectives of the program, that it was to give participants an opportunity to gain meaningful work experience. They participated in professional development and they had the opportunity to learn and develop valuable and critical job skills. And they had an understanding of acceptable work habits. They also provided understanding of public service operations. And then they provided training in personal finance, financial management. And the part of the operating the eligibility requirements. So operating, this was during the summer months, roughly between June and August, roughly like 10 weeks. And it was Monday through Friday, And then it depended on if you worked for a business or you worked for the city, the hours that the youth worked was 20 to 40 hours a week. And then to be eligible for the program, you had to be a University City resident, ages 16 to 19, and you had to successfully completed the previous high school semester, and that you didn't have any felonies or misdemeanors or type one school offense. And then also, and then just in summary, between the years of 2014 and 2017, the YE program provided summer jobs to approximately 85 students. And then of the 85 students, 36 students, you know, kept their jobs after the summer. And then the jobs consisted of local businesses, working at the library and the city itself. And then, I mean, overall, the program appeared to, you know, be a positive experience on the youth who had participated. And if you have any questions, I'll try to answer them.
Questions from members of council? Mr. Smotherson.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mayor Crow. Mr. Cole, yes. Well, this is a question I believe is actually for the city manager or Mr. Cole. I'm not sure who, but what I wanted to find out is, I'm not sure, I guess I'm making more of a statement also in that, you know, I made the suggestion for this simply because of what COVID is doing to jobs and what COVID is doing to employment. You know, we're offering grant programs, are offering grants for employee, for the businesses in the Loop, businesses in U City. I don't know when this is going to, I don't know when we're gonna come out of this. But what I'm looking at in reference to the city is that we create something not only for just the businesses here, but also for the youth so that they can reestablish themselves back into the employment, because these employers and businesses are going to need help on that end. Opposed to giving them money, they're gonna also need help in and an incentive to actually get the youth involved and give them these opportunities. So I'm not sure when this is going to be able to take place, but I'd like to get your opinion about when you think this might or could happen. And I know that that could be next year in 2021, late 2021.
Honorable Mayor, Mayor Pro Tem Smotherson, I believe that in part is contingent upon what happens with COVID. Yes, and it's just so many unknowns related to that. You will recall as a part of the presentation, it indicated that the city was not the coordinating body. It was a partnership with the city and the school district to fund it. But the actual coordinating body was the Chamber of Commerce, which has gone defunct at this point. So we would need to identify how the program would be coordinated as well, and follow up with the school district to determine if there's still an interest in participating in it. So it's a difficult question to answer at this point, simply because of the unknowns associated with the virus, but there is some preliminary work that we can do with the school district to gauge their level of interest with the program.
Piggyback on that, I hope we will keep this on what I'd call the mid burner, because if the Costco development continues to move forward and they are wanting to hire local employees, it would be good for us to have programs like this in place. And frankly, my guess is it would not be that hard to approach some of those larger employers and see if they'd like to participate in the program once we have a better idea of what is happening moving forward at Olive and 170. What other questions do we have regarding the youth employment program? I think we all probably need to give a nod of our hat to Byron Price, because this was kind of his baby way back when this started in 2011. Is the senior programs next, Mr. Rowe, is that right?
The next program we have is the Explorers. We have Chief Hampton that will just give a brief overview of that past program. Chief Hampton?
Yes, good evening, Honorable Mayor and members of the council. Can you hear me well?
Yes.
Okay, all right. The Explorer program probably ended for the police department here in University City probably in the late 2000s. I couldn't get an actual date on it. We were still researching. We believe around the time of 2008, 2009, could be a little bit earlier than that. But the Explorers, and I'm going to go through a lot of the pros and the purpose and the leadership portion of it real briefly. But we have to utilize residents ages 14 and up. Pretty much from the areas of University City, Clayton, Ladue, Charlac, and any other surrounding municipalities that did not have Explorer posts. That's how thin our pool was for University City as far as cooperation. The Explorer program, Scout program is what it's called, is a division of the Boy Scouts of America. So we're subject to their bylaws. As opposed to the organization and the insurance and the structure of that. So you know kind of the troubles that the Boy Scouts of America is going through right now with lawsuits. So thus is the insurance increases and thus that portion of the funding is somewhat diminished from the police, I guess, from the Boy Scouts of America Explorer Post. Now the purpose of that is to educate young adults on the mission, on the purpose, on the objectives of law enforcement. The program stresses leadership, service, and social issues with outdoors and fitness. The Explorers would normally gain a better understanding of social, economic, and governmental systems within gaining insight and practical experiences in law enforcement. It creates the leadership, stresses the leadership and for each Explorer to be given, as male and female, young boys and young girls. These Explorers were given community service tasks, which then helps fund the post, the Explorer post, so they can participate in activities and little to none out-of-pocket costs to the Explorer or the police department. However, in the past, we've had to help as far as the police funding for those volunteering for security details and marathons because simply they did not have the funds to give them. So some of the qualifications that were then and they're still present now for any posts that are still active. Per Boy Scouts of America guidelines, the Explorer must be over 14 years of age and graduated the eighth grade. They cannot be older than 21 years of age, and they must maintain a 2.0 grade point average on a 4-point scale while in high school and possess a GED. No criminal record and must have good moral standards and values. A potential participant must attend several meetings without any unexcused absences before being allowed to officially join. The curriculum here in University City detailed around University City ordinances, state laws, and constitutional law dealt with building searches, car stops, bomb threats, active shooter training, white and blue collar crimes, first aid, CPR, traffic control, radio procedures, conflict resolution, domestic violence as well, crime scene processing. Now, some of the pros of that Explorer program that we had here in University City, it was a good community outreach program that allows youth to see what it was like to be in the law enforcement organization and law enforcement profession. With all the negative attention, misinformation, and social media, sometimes the programs like this sends a good breaking down of the barriers. It was good for future recruiting in some aspects. It's not a guarantee that many of the Explorers will stick around for your community, especially if they're not from your community, which we had to branch out on that. It also allows participants to gain leadership attributes. These are the pros of that. It helps, which they can also use for their college applications when they're applying for college. It exposes participants to public service and volunteering, which is a positive for the community. And it also gave them scholarship opportunities, which in turn came from funds provided from the city or the police department. Now, the biggest cons, and that's pretty much ending on that before asking any questions. The biggest cons on that is while the Post is mostly funded through fundraisers and donations, there are a lot of funds that is required to come from the police department. A lot of the funding went towards uniforms, supplies, and administrative costs. And like I said, the cost of the insurance is definitely up with the Boy Scouts of America providing that insurance. Recruiting is an ongoing issue, as many young people are not seeing policing in the same manner that they did in the early 2000s and towards the late 2000s. But this is something that we try to build within our community engagement as well. But also they fear what their friends might think of them participating in such a program, especially when they were wearing uniforms, somewhat reminiscent of an ROTC uniform, but it's a little more in the public's eye because it's not ROTC and it's not dealing with the school. It's simply dealing with the police department. Okay. While the Explorers are covered by insurance under the Boy Scouts of America, there are some liabilities that the police department may have. A written policy, we actually had to do away with our written policy because we had not been active with our Explorer Post. So that was one of the standards that the Missouri Police Chiefs Association required us to get rid of and not keep a superfluous policy on file at that point. We do have to have a policy for that if that's activated. And then the last thing, while the Post meets once a month, it does take a lot of time to organize everything that goes along with operating the Post. The advisor usually is commissioned personnel. So you're talking about either working extra hours or taking away from the community itself to apply that tutorship, that mentorship on a regular basis. And like I said, that's once a month, and that does not include the activities or the community engagement. That's all I have on the presentation. Now I'm open for any questions, any concerns and issues.
Questions from members of council? Mr. Clay.
Yes, thank you, Mayor Crow. Thank you, Chief Hampton, for the presentation. What do you think the cost might be for the program today, given the challenges with insurance and the expense associated with that? And so, if I'm understanding it correctly, what the Boy Scouts contribute would be diminished because they are paying increased insurance costs. So what would that mean for our cost? Do you know how much they would go up, by what factor?
No, I really don't have a real number to give you, real analytics to give you on that portion of it, based off of, it's just kind of speculation, and it's tens of thousands of dollars at the very least. But to be effective, you're talking about overtime pay for the commission personnel assigned to that. And like I say, you're talking about the uniforms, the supplies, and administrative costs. Now, the thing about uniforms and supplies, it's just like a police uniform. Once you cut a uniform to a certain custom fit, certain custom size, the length, the waist, the hem and everything, then that's pretty much, you have to find a kid to literally fit that uniform or else that goes to waste right there. And you have to purchase new uniforms. There's not many reimbursements or reusing of the uniforms of that. There are some that you can get away with the jackets and maybe some of the shirts, but definitely not many with the pants.
Okay. Do we know what was the cost of the program before?
I will have to dig that up. I literally have maybe two people here that were assistants in the program, and they were not the records keepers of those items. And we do not have that particular dollar amount on file. That's something I can check with Keith and the finance on to see what was being spent back in the early 2000s, maybe to confirm what type of cost was going out from the police department.
Okay, I think that would be very helpful. I understand that there's likely the cost is probably significant. I mean, I'm not, I'm aware of that, but I think you can make an argument with the state of the perception of police now more than ever, this might be something to invest in. But clearly we need to know the cost, but I do see some benefit, and it seems like UCity, and I don't know, since we don't have the history about what was done in the past, it's hard to understand all the dynamics, but it seems like in University City, with, I think this is a testament to your leadership, Chief Hampton, with how our police department is perceived, at least in our community, I think we have a better shot than most jurisdictions in making this a bit more viable. I think some other locations would have some real challenges. I think it would just be, if I were an alder person or council person now, I would say, look, I don't think we're going to get anybody. Let's not even try. Right. But I think in University City, there might be some opportunities that aren't available in other locations, again, because of your leadership and the stellar behavior of our police force.
And I do agree with you, Councilmember Clay. My biggest concern is that the location, the space, and the manpower and resources used to get this up and going effectively is what I'm concerned with on the police side. And meaning that I don't have a meeting space for them. I don't have a training room for them in this temporary facility right now. Literally, and to help fund and keep this going, literally after whether it's a 8-hour shift personnel, they would have to work a couple hours over for the meetings and for the trainings. Or if it's a 12-hour shift personnel, then it's kind of pulling them away from some duties that would be needed. I understand the need of it, but it was a reason then, and I was present back then. I was not active with this Explore Post, but the reason for Clayton, Ladue, Charlac, and these other communities to have to join in was just so the program could survive. And that was that's kind of says a lot to what we had to go through just to keep that going. And I do remember, you know, Clayton being one of the biggest contributors, Clayton and Ladue being some of the biggest contributors to sending the teens over here, as opposed to 1 to 2 students from the UCity High School, or even, right. It was just kind of disheartening to see that you didn't have that participation coming from, and there was recruiting going on within those organizations, but it just did not effectively occur.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Smotherson.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Chief Hampton, for the presentation. I did want to say that I agree with Council Member Clay in that it's a critical time. It's a very critical time that we bring our students and our kids some understanding of where our police stand, and keep that connection. And so the question that I'm asking of you is that, what is the involvement in the elementary schools? Is what I'd first like to know. I know that the age limit is 14, but what is our involvement in the elementary school? Because believe me, with the times that we're living in right now, that connection is critical, and they need to see the police in a positive way. Right. You know.
Now we have several programs that target not only junior high but elementary schools. Whether that's being the Police Athletic League. That we partnered with St. Louis County within our school district, or whether that's being some of the beyond the badge presentations that we tried to present that I brought over here from the Noble organization. There's other community engagement opportunities that we can utilize that would not be this stringent as far as the funds and just in my opinion on that aspect. Now, as far as the elementary schools, there used to be Real Talk, Sultan Muhammad, that is going away. So literally Real Talk in the University City school districts is minimized on that. And it literally doesn't start until middle school. So even the DARE programming and anything like that, it's more of this, because middle grade starts at sixth grade now. So you're talking kindergarten through five. the attention span and the buy-in from the parents to come to meetings is just not as great as it is for a junior high on up, a sixth grader on up through high school to be involved with after school activities, as opposed to a fourth or fifth grader being bused or picked up by parents.
Okay, and you mentioned also, and I know the program ended a while back. In the meantime, since that's happened, I mean, now we have a lot of the Normandy students that come to UCity. Is Normandy something that can be included in the listing of cities and areas that you recruit from?
Yeah, and I think I don't think it's mentioned in here, but it did say other surrounding municipalities, but that included anybody that wanted to participate within our surroundings. Now, what I can say, Men's Night Out, Ladies Encouraging Others, these are all organizations and groups that we partner with within our school district to help send that community engagement fund to let them know what that law enforcement is not. The most recent, like I said, was Beyond the Badge. I personally got up on a stage with St. Louis County Prosecutor Wesley Bell, as well as St. Louis Hall of Famer Aninas Williams, who's also a pastor. So I brought four police officers here from University City Police Department. That's to speak about the dialogue, answering any questions that we have. Now that's high school age. Now middle school age, it was more of the PAL program. It's more of the PAL summer program that got canceled this summer because of COVID. But that was something that goes 5 days a week, and then on Saturdays they would do a road trip. And the last road trip ended in Memphis, Tennessee last year. So it there are programs that just had to be curbed because of the pandemic.
Okay, I'm just hoping that one day we stay ready for that time that kids go back to school, and we can somehow come back and influence them to see things differently. Right. If you understand what I'm saying, and especially in University City. Right. So thank you, sir.
Chief, could you also share what is the role of the school resource officers?
Oh, the school resource officers are there for that daily engagement. They're not just there to stand. They're not doing security. That's not their role in the school districts and the school system. It's just a different version of what the old school DARE program or the McGruff Crime Dog program is. It's called St. Louis Schools Resource Programs, and they actually have to go through extensive training for that. So the initial training is 40 hours, and then the follow up. Advanced training is another 32 hours that they literally have to learn how to engage with young people within our community and within our school system. So, like I said, they're not just standing at a door watching people down the hall. They're in classrooms and engaging with those. So there's one station. There's Officer Gill stationed at the Brittany Woods Middle School, as well as Officer Lee Tuckson. And these are both UCity residents born and raised here, and both have over 25 years of service, and they're within our school system. And Lee Tuckson is at the high school.
Chief, I believe that, all too often Black and brown people, their first exposure to police isn't a situation that lends itself to establishing a strong rapport. And I believe that that's why we promote the school resource officers, so they can have a different perspective of police operations and police as just people. Right. So certainly commend you on those things.
Right. I just want to add just a couple programs that's in the work right now. Ladies Encouraging Others, which is a female officer and non-police employee group here at the police department. They're doing the Adopt the Family, but they were also doing a prom giveaway for two young ladies within the high school system. So that's something a little out of the norm that we've done within the last couple of years, funding for proms as well as adopting families for Christmas and also for Thanksgiving as well.
Any other questions of the chief? Hearing none, can we move forward then to the senior program?
Yes, Mayor, we have one final program that's going to be presented by our Parks Director, Darren Dunkel. And this is an actual program that is in existence. It's on pause, I will say, the majority of it until the COVID issue, I won't say resolve, but at least we are in a better position to begin opening up facilities such as Centennial Commons. So I will turn it over to Mr. Dunkel.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. Honorable Mayor, members of council, currently the Parks Department offers three different categories of services for seniors. The first one being our Golden Lions program. This is a program that we started up last year. If you may recall, an organization called Mideast Agency on Aging, which changed its name to Aging Ahead, ran a senior program for several years. Last year, they changed their format and offered some different things, thus opening, you know, having a void in what the programs that we ran for our seniors. So we.
I'm sorry, Mr. Dunkel, are you sharing your screen?
Yes, I am.
Okay, we can't see your presentation.
Okay, let me. Can you see it?
No.
No.
Because it's showing on my screen that it's showing here.
Might be easier just to read from it.
Okay, basically.
There we go. Yeah, it works.
Okay. Like I said, the Golden Lions, we started that last year out of a need from a void with Aging Ahead moving in a little different direction on what they were doing. This program was meeting on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 9 a.m. to noon at the Heeman Park Community Center. We did sign an agreement with Aging Ahead in which they provided transportation for seniors to come to the program, as well as they provided a lunch. The program mainly focused on, you know, the social interaction, did some arts and crafts and games, and occasionally we brought in guest speakers on to talk about a numerous different topics and do that. And part of that program, we had a part-time senior coordinator as well as a part-time recreation program supervisor who helped full-time staff with that program. Now, as Mr. Rose stated, that due to COVID and shutting down facilities and things, this program has been on hiatus since, I think, towards the end of March. One of the things that has happened since then, Aging Ahead has started a program during this COVID that they have been providing and delivering some lunches to some of our seniors on a weekly basis. Right now, our contract with Aging Ahead expired back in June. They are interested in moving forward with that once we get a little further through the COVID and know what we're doing. As I stated, our community center is shut down and our staff has been put on hold due to that as well. Let me get to here the next program. The next thing that we offer is that we do offer fitness memberships to our seniors. These are through two different programs. One is the Renew Active, which is sponsored through United Healthcare, and there is no cost to the senior through this program. The other one is the Silver Sneakers, which is also provided through some healthcare providers. And basically, it covers the cost of membership. The city receives funds from the healthcare organizations themselves, and it allows them to utilize some of our facilities as well as discounts on various programs and activities held at Centennial Commons. The third area is that we offer a bunch of different senior programs, as you can see on your scene, to seniors in general. Those who are a part of the healthcare program can also participate in these programs, most of them at no cost or at a discounted cost. These are mainly held at our Centennial Commons location, and we offer these year round. If anybody has any questions in regards to any of these programs or anything else, I'll be open to answer those questions.
See who is raising their hands. Can we go from screen sharing, please? I know Councilmember Smotherson.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mayor Crow. Mr. Dunkel, just a quick question, and that is that in my proposal about the senior program, you are aware that the Aging Ahead program was a 4-day program originally. Are you aware of that?
Yes, that is correct.
And our seniors were, you know, even though we picked up and started the 2-day program once Aging Ahead stepped aside, we did a great job with what we were doing for the 2 days, but they are looking for a 4-day program. Is there a way that we can, once COVID is over and we start moving toward that normal process, can we move forward to a 4-day program?
Well, the challenge with a 4-day program as of right now, we continue having discussions with Aging Ahead, is that right now they can only provide funding for the transportation and the meals on a 2-day-a-week program. So if we were to pick up extra days, we'd have to look at other ways we can do that, because the majority of the participants in the Golden Lion program rely on the transportation part to get them to and from. And without that makes it a little more difficult. But to answer your question, yes, can we continue to have those discussions and try to find a way to do that? We will.
Yeah, and we may have to look at using someone else other than Aging Ahead to do that, because Aging Ahead, again, as you know, started their own program out on Fifi at the YMCA out there. And so that's part of the reason why they're not interested in actually reestablishing with us. Now, I don't know, that could change after we get back to normal, but again, that's part of the reason why we lost them for that program, for the 4-day program. And our seniors were not interested in going out to the YMCA out there. They were not interested at all. So,
yes, that's
my suggestion.
How many people are in the program right now?
We usually have somewhere right around 35 to 40 people show up on a daily basis.
And all U City residents, or is it available to others surrounding communities?
It's available to others in surrounding communities, but I'd say probably 96 to 98% of them are U City residents.
Okay. Ms. Klein.
So the program normally runs 2 days a week, and it's a full program, right? All day?
No, it starts at 9 in the morning and goes to noon.
Oh, okay. So right now you're providing meals for members that come?
Yes, we have a little light snack in the morning, a coffee and that kind of stuff. And then at lunch, Aging Ahead will bring in a warm meal for lunch around 11:30.
Okay, but for COVID times, you're delivering meals and there are no activities, right?
That is correct.
So, I mean, are there any resources that are not being that are there that are not being used because of the diminished service for COVID?
Most of the senior services across the county have been pretty much put on hold just due to the COVID situation and the vulnerability of the seniors and, you know, facility shutdowns, those sort of things. But, you know, we constantly look to see if there's any other type of programs, people we can partner with to kind of leverage our services as well. And we continue to do that.
Yeah, I'm on the senior commission, and they were kind of talking about figuring out a way to assist seniors to get in touch with electronics or to get a hold of electronics and to be trained and some kind of program like that, which I think would be especially useful in these times when people can't get out and there may be some seniors that don't have access to that. So, you know, I was just wondering if there were excess resources that could maybe be used for that, since I think.
I'm not aware of any resources right now, but, you know, we will continue to search and reach out to some of our partners and other agencies to see if there is something that we can come up with.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Other questions regarding the senior program or of Mr. Dunkel?
Mayor, I did want to take this opportunity to share with you as well as with the residents. One of the questions that I'm often asked is, you know, when are we going to get these facilities back open, mainly Centennial Commons as well as the community center? The challenge that we face in St. Louis County, and I would say that this is probably consistent for the city of St. Louis, is our positivity rate. Our positivity rate, which means kind of the infection rate, is above 8% today. And if you're looking at opening up facilities where you're gonna actually have people inside, especially the gym type of facility, you really are wanting a positivity rate between 1% and 3%. So the reason that I'm hesitant to say that, you know, once we have resolved the COVID situation is because there may not be a resolution for several years. And so I think that we need to get to a point where we can at least reasonably believe that the passage of the infection is going to be extremely low. And we're a long way from that. We're talking 8% now, roughly, want to get between 1% and 3%. But that's what I'm looking at before I'll make a recommendation to you regarding the potential opening of either Centennial Commons or the community center. Really basing upon the guidance that we're receiving from Clark County, the St. Louis County Health Department. So we're working very closely with them when we should actually be giving strong consideration to opening up those type of facilities.
Clay, to that point, City Manager Rose, I know other communities had opened up swimming pools. I don't actually, and clearly we're past that season. I didn't know if other communities that have municipal recreation centers had opened theirs up. Do you have any information on that? And I understand our community, our dynamics are different, but I'm just curious what some of our sister municipalities may be doing.
I'm not familiar with them opening up kind of the gym type of facility. Certainly over the summer, several of them opened up their pools. Several, as you know, did not, such as University City. I will tell you that it's my intention to look very closely because of what we know about the virus now and the impact of the sun on the virus and other things, whether it is more reasonable to open up the pool at least next summer session. So I would suspect unless we are in dire straits with the COVID, that you will likely get a recommendation from me to open the facility. We will also be bringing forward to you a recommendation that the management of the pool next summer actually be contracted out. That was also one of the other challenges that we knew we would have, which is just trying to get the lifeguards that could we could use in order to help manage the pool and staff the pool. So I'm not sure about the opening up the community center in Centennial Commons. That's going to be more closely tied to the positivity rate. The pool is different because it's an outdoor facility.
Mr. Smotherson.
Mr. Rose, I just wanted to ask a question that is similar to Mr. Councilmember Clay in that aren't we opening our elementary schools in the near future, I believe? I'm not sure if somebody may know this better than I do, but I think I heard that we are even considering opening our elementary schools. So the question that I have is, what are the guidelines that they're following and if that could help us in reference to opening our facility like Centennial Commons, because, you know, that is happening. And I will say this, this is killing me. I'm just growing fat and old, and I really need that GMO. So I just wanted to say that and just let you know, because I really need to get that gym open. So thank you, sir, you have to answer that question.
With regards to the schools, we live in a very conservative state, and I think often what is allowed within Missouri might be different how they handle it in other states. I think for us, it's critical that we look at what is the positivity rate. I think even with the schools, they will likely give the parents the option of online versus in class. That's something that Dr. Sharonica could probably comment on better than I. I don't have the details on it. But I would say that she shares the same concern that I would have, which is the demographics of our community and the infection rate that we have in St. Louis County.
Oh, and Mayor Groh, I can shed some light on it. Julia Goldstein is in fact open. They're doing a cohort model, 2 days for one cohort and then 2 days for another cohort. So that's how it is being handled.
And that's why I was asking if there's any guidelines that they're following that could help us in giving any interested resident the opportunity to get into the gym. And also, and I know we've got everything shut down, but also, you know, we've got people that have paid memberships. Is there anything online that we're offering in reference to exercise, in reference to training, if you understand what I'm saying, that could be on our website? Because again, you know, we have people that have paid memberships, and I just to give them as many options as we can. And then I would love the ideal of having 10 people come in and, you know, having shifts. So anything that can help. Thank you, sir.
All right, thank you.
Kind of hard to follow Blaine's introduction to his question now. is there anything else to come before us on the study session, Mr. Rose?
No, Mayor, that concludes our presentations.
Questions from council? Otherwise, we will adjourn the study session and pick up in about 10 minutes for our regular session. And then it is my understanding that we likely will have an executive session. Am I correct, Mr. Rose?
Mayor, that is correct.
Okay. Hearing nothing and seeing no hands being waved, our study session is adjourned and we will start our public session in about 8 minutes. Thank you.